Welcome, everybody, to the Side Quest, episode 520, Side Questing's weekly-ish podcast. This week, it's going to be an all-star, star-studded PAX East special. And by that, I mean there's only two stars you really need to look at, the revolving stars of Dylan Martin.
Hello.
Whose pirate captain's hat is stuck in the corner of Google Effects.
My monocle. Yeah.
Your monocle. And Rexley Pena Florida.
Hi. I don't have a pirate hat.
He doesn't have a pirate hat.
And, really happy.
And I am Dolly Demovsky. Although you are rocking the old school PlayStation 3 headphones.
Yes, I am.
The headset. Oh, that always works. You actually sound pretty good, surprisingly.
I'm kind of surprised it's actually working right now. Like just looking at the thing and hoping it doesn't fail on me.
No, it's working almost too well for what I would have expected. no knock to what Sony's doing. It's just I've used like Logitech headsets and Xbox headsets that just will not work. So and my Skullcandy headset is not very good. So that's good. I'll have to remember the PlayStation one.
I actually just bought this Logitech one.
Oh, did you?
It's
okay.
Actually really decent.
Oh yeah, one I had was like the really little tiny flimsy one, so I only spent $20 on a headset. You probably spent a little bit more than I did.
Yeah, I did.
Well, that's all. It's totally worth it. I'm enjoying podcasting. We've been doing the Just the Tip show. There's a plug for that.
Yeah.
And Lonely TARDIS, that's gonna be getting back on the air here shortly, and now we're gonna get kind of finish off the fifth season of the Side Quest and start our sixth season, mostly because we kind of missed our birthday while we were all at PAX East. We did the actual fifth birthday of Side Questing, 5 years old, guys. Wow, been around for 5 years.
Wow.
So yeah, so we were going to start season six, but then obviously PAX East was right in the middle there and things all went kind of crazy all over the place. So we're... we're going to postpone the big birthday celebration for a couple of weeks, but it will be fantastic. We'll do it at the beginning of May and make sure we get everybody there. So
nice.
But, that doesn't matter because here we go. I have you two fine gentlemen here, to get us rocking. So, we're going to talk PAX East, which we all just came back from. First and foremost, did either of you suffer from the PAX pox?
No. Not really. I mean, sneezing a little bit, but I kind of sneeze. That's just my thing. So
that's your thing is to sneeze.
I think I avoided the PAX pox just because I think the week before that, I actually got pretty sick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just coughing just a little bit at PAX East, but I had like four balls of hand sanitizer just rubbed my hands. Okay. All right. Next person.
Yeah. You totally need hand sanitizer at PAX East. And the nice thing about it is they've finally started putting the hand sanitizer, like the little stations all over the place. So God, that helps so well.
Yeah. I saw that. I was just like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Nope. No hand sanitizer. No PAX pox.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's wrong with me?
Like, you have your white blood cells are white knight blood cells.
Apparently.
Very well. I'm glad you survived. I also survived, didn't get sick. I thought I was getting a little run down, which is usually like the precursor to getting the PAX pox. I've been super tired lately, but I think that's just because I was just really tired and all those late nights at PAX. From all the walking around and stuff, my body's still kind of recovering. I think there were a couple of those nights where you guys weren't in the infamous Ryan Gann, Taylor Bliss, Tony Demovsky in my hotel room. The four of us in one room was the worst sleeping arrangement. So we show up at the hotel, the wonderful Courtyard by Marriott downtown, which thankfully it was right above all of the major parties, like the Bethesda party, which by the way I heard was awesome. Ended up not going to it. God. Stupid me. A bunch of other parties are there. So we were actually within great distance. We were the perfect location party-wise. So that's a positive for anybody who's actually looking to go to Boston next year for PAX East. It is a fantastic spot to be at. However, I get an email the week before PAX It says, "We're sorry to inform you," and instantly I'm like, "Oh dear God, no." "We're sorry to inform you that we're consistently we're working on renovations, and so you know, your room, you may be hearing things throughout the night while we're working, yada yada." So, okay, no big deal. Show up there, walk into the lobby. The entire lobby is covered in plastic, and everything's torn up.
Oh God!
We get to the registration desk, and I'm like, "Yes, so we're here for the room." And the girl looks through the computer. I'm making a tapping symbol. She's looking on the computer. She says, "Oh, actually, we're overbooked." And I'm like, "Excuse me? Yeah, we're overbooked for the room that you wanted, which was the two queen size beds. So we're going to bump you up to a like an executive suite. Is that okay?" So I'm like, that's very okay. She's there. "It's a bigger room. Now, granted, it's only one king size bed, but we'll give you a roll away, a fold away bed there too. And it's got a, it's got a seat and a couch there." I'm like, "Perfect. Awesome. It's bigger room. Everything great." Get up to the room. The room is tiny by all standards. Oh, the bathroom is bigger than the rest of the room, which led me to believe, wow, how small were the rest of the rooms if we got the 15th floor executive suite?
Oh my God.
King size bed was fantastic. The rollaway bed was fantastic, but the third bed was a sofa, a tiny little sofa with an ottoman that didn't serve as a bed at all. Oh, in fact, geez. I slept on the floor that last night because I did not want that bed.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so regardless. Wow. So I thought, with all the sleeping arrangements there and constantly shifting every night, not going to bed till two or three that last night, really. I think we went to bed. Oh, Rexy, wow. I'm surprised. My voice was gone, Rexy. I'm surprised your voice was still around.
I could barely talk, I think, Sunday and Monday.
Yeah, that was me all day. Sunday, my voice was gone. Monday at the office, my voice was completely gone. But yeah, so I was tired all day Sunday. For those who don't know, Dylan, you missed out on this. We ended up going to, we went to a couple parties, and then we kind of completed the night at Biddy Early's, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We had a great time there. Did not know this, but Rexley was a rapper in his former life. I think you were Tupac.
What?
The way you were spitting out rhymes. So, of course, the DJ's playing hip-hop music, pop music. The DJ actually had a really good mix of music going on.
He played
the DuckTales theme song at one point, and the place went nuts.
Did.
It's a tiny hole-in-the-wall bar that's no bigger than anybody's basement, probably smaller than your basement's. But so he's playing hip-hop, and all of a sudden Rexley just starts just spitting rhymes like ludicrous.
It was so funny, man. It was awesome.
My brother, everybody was impressed. Everybody was impressed. I know, right?
I was channeling my 12-year-old self there.
Before we go any further, I can top your hotel story. I had five people. We were expecting two beds. To the desk, and they say, "Oh, well, we were overbooked, and we can only give you, this pretty much the same kind of room that you had." And it was one king size bed, but we had five people.
Oh my Lord. Were there people sleeping on the floor?
Well, okay. So this is what happened. We had one roll away bed.
Mm-hmm.
Another person actually brought their own air mattress.
Oh,
so
great
she
idea.
Blew that up. So she had that, but then it was me, my wife and my brother sleeping on the king size bed. I was in the middle.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's you should be exactly just in case. Just in case. Too funny. Okay, yeah. Your story tops mine completely. Oh, yeah. That's not a bad idea though.
I didn't party as much, but that's partly because I had seafood Saturday, and then I was just okay.
Dude, wow.
You know what? That happened to Taylor as well. Taylor had something bad on Saturday because he was not feeling it on Saturday night. He was a little bit nauseous, so. Who knows? Who knows? But So hotel stories aside, PAX actually had video games to see.
Yeah, that is a true statement.
Surprisingly. Yeah. So we actually did see quite a few things. You guys have put some great articles together already. I figure we're going to have the rest of the crew on next week, but I figure I'd love to get the idea for what you guys saw this week. And there was a lot of cool stuff. And so let's start. We'll just kind of do one around the table first, and we'll go from there. So Rexley, give me one game. Give me something you saw at the show that you really enjoyed.
I think I'll leave transition to whoever, but I think the other game that I really liked was The Gods Will Be Watching.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, tell me.
Yeah, I didn't check that game
out. I didn't see it either. I heard about it, but go ahead. Tell me a little bit about it.
But yeah, so like pretty much for each day, they had a different theme. I think when I was there on Saturday with Sam Bixon, I think it was survival.
Okay.
So the thing is like, okay, so these seven people are stranded on like on some alien planet, and they need to like do a bunch of things. They need to, you know, get some food just so they have something to eat. They need to repair the radio so they can contact people. They need to, you know, like do all these things to just survive. And I think the first thing was like, okay, you can only do five separate things on this day and make sure you get, you know, you could try to keep people alive as much as possible. And so it's funny because it was a really short demo for me because I did five things. I went to get food. I talked to someone. I fixed the radio. I did two other things. And then said, okay, day's over. So I clicked end day, and it's like, you forgot to light the fireplace.
Oh.
They're all dead. And then this game was like really – it did not hold anyone. It's like, you were foolish. And I'm like, thanks. And then I just got up and I'm like, man, that's a really interesting game. Like it's one of those games. It's like you don't expect it to be that hard.
Is it is it point and click?
It is point and click. Okay. Yeah, you pretty much have it's just a bunch of people surrounded surrounding a campfire. Like it's like a woods kind of setting, and it's just it's a pixelated game. So you sit you just see these guys and you click on one of them. Like, okay, hey, what do you want to do? Want to fix the radio or do you want to get some food? So stuff like that, and they'll tell you like in the text box, like, okay, you got X amount of food for the day, or you fixed the radio, so you got this much left to do. But it was really interesting because it's one of those it's those games that I like nowadays where they don't give you a tutorial. They just put you right in and you're like, okay, figure it out yourself. And so like that was pretty fun. I think because Sam was watching me on the big screen. That's the worst part, because they had two computers. One was being displayed on the big screen, the other one wasn't. And I just so happened to be the one on the big screen. And I think there was a bunch of people that were just watching us. And I went, I did this, and I failed immediately. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of embarrassing. But it's also kind of cool that it's that level of difficulty. So
yeah,
I think I talked to them after. I think they said something about having it released in June.
Oh, really? Wow.
2014. I could be completely wrong. But, I mean, it looks pretty much done. It looks great. And I'm definitely going to get that when it comes out. So
Is it PC?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just a huge fan of really difficult games that I can never beat. Like, that is kind of like the big theme for me playing games right now. Like, Don't Starve.
Sure.
Spelunky, FTL.
Oh, totally.
You know, I've sunk in like over 50 hours into Spelunky, not beat the game once.
Yeah.
FTL, maybe 20 hours. I've gotten to the end boss, the end game, but never beat it yet. Don't Starve, 20, and I definitely am very far from being adept enough to survive the winter and the terrible creatures that try to kill you over time.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
That sounds like the kind of game I would like. I just
it's pretty great
games that just torture you for.
But you know what's great about those kinds, and I totally agree with you, Dylan. I mean, I've got FTL on my iPad. I've got Don't Starve on the PS4. Yeah. I'm into those. I have Spelunky, but I'm more into, I think, Steam World Dig, which is a 3DS game, which is very similar.
I've been meaning to try that.
Oh, I love that game.
It's on the PC now.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Definitely pick it up. It was one of my favorite games of 2013. Totally came out of left field, but it's like the goal of the game isn't to complete the game. It's just it's to survive and learn to survive and try different methods of surviving. I think that's that kind of game. There's something really cool about that I enjoy. So yeah, I'm glad you like that. Guys will be watching. So I'm going to talk about a game that's kind of in that same vein. If I may, if any more questions about Guys Will Be Watching, either anybody.
I'm excited for it. I really want to play that again.
So I had a chance to check out This War of Mine, which is by, I believe they're a Polish developer. I have them in my notes here somewhere. I'm still working on the article. But so this War of Mine, it's a 2D or side-scrolling, I guess you could say, point and click-ish. But you kind of start as a let me phrase it this way. It's a war survival game, but taken from the sides of the actual people that are being affected. So like Joe Schmo, civilian, kind of caught in the middle of two warring sides. And the whole purpose of this was that, you know, war is, it doesn't matter what side of war you're on. If you're trying to survive, you're trying to survive. So it's almost zombie apocalypse-ish. And when you think about it, it is, you know, war is definitely like a zombie apocalypse in that you're just doing your best to survive. You almost don't care who's winning the war, and you just want it to end. So the whole purpose of this game is you have to survive as long as possible. And there's a little bit of roguelike to it from the timing standpoint and from items you find when you're searching for things, in that you don't know how long the war is going to last. It could be 2 weeks worth of in-game time to 2 months worth of in-game time to 2 years worth of in-game and so forth. You know, they left that random to keep you kind of strung along. So the game is laid out like this 2D side-scrolling point-and-click where you go in through buildings, kind of rummage through buildings, and set up a building as kind of your home base. Let's say you find an apartment building or a complex or a warehouse. That becomes your home base. As time progresses, you can meet other survivors, decide to bring them in, or you meet, you know, you have family members that you got to take care of. They can get sick. They can be hungry. They can be tired. You've got to learn to create water filters or make fire or, you know, whatever. You can build furniture like beds and tools and stuff for them to survive.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And it's everything takes time to create, and tools and resources. And so you have to scavenge for this stuff, but you can only scavenge for it at nighttime because during the daytime the war is taking place. So during the daytime you're doing work. At nighttime you're scavenging. People are getting tired throughout the day. They're hungry. If they get sick, you have to look for medicine. Sometimes you can look for medicine. You know, if you don't have medicine, you can run across other people who are willing to trade it, but you have to have enough things to trade them. And they can go through different seasons. So there's like spring, summer, winter, you know, so forth. So, you know, in the winter months, you have to have heat. So what do you burn? If things get too cold, you have to, you know, destroy the bed that you created and burn the bed, which means people are now sleeping on the floor, which means they're not going to get good enough sleep. So they'll be tired. They'll move around more slowly. And it's all done in 2D. And when people die, there's like this, I mean, you definitely feel like you have this emotional toll. And then, you know, there's the whole idea, I think, that the developer was telling me is that it's all about choice and the difficult choices you have to make. Mm-hmm. And he made a great, I played very shortly. I ended up dying very quickly. he brought up this example where, let's say you have two family members and a couple friends, it's you, your family member, let's say a sister, and you have a couple friends and a couple of survivors. So there's, let's say, five or six of you, and you come across enough food, for one person, you know, or you come across a little bit of food. What do? Do you eat the food yourself so you have the energy to go out and try to find more stuff? Do you give it to your sister or brother, whoever it is? Or do you try to split it up amongst the people so that nobody really gets enough food to survive? But, you know, so there's all these different choices that make. Some people can get angry at you, so there's tensions can flare. You can get in fights with not only with the survivors, but with other people you run across. You can fight up. It's very deep, but it hits
those me. Fights be resolved?
Yeah, so fights can be resolved either by conversation or sometimes just good old-fashioned fisticuffs. If you're punching someone, if you're shooting someone, if you manage to find bullets or a gun, or make, you know, a knife or whatever. So there's all these levels of depth and detail that go into this game. And if you're one of the moments that I was playing, I entered one of the other buildings at nighttime, and there was already some people scavenging through there. So I thought, I've got to avoid these folks just in case, because you never know if someone's a good person or a bad person. So you kind of watch them and hear them as they're doing things and the stuff they're saying so that you know if they're, you know, going to be okay to talk to. And really interesting, because I went and talked to one person And they seemed really – there was two people in the building besides me. So the one person seemed really cool. They were offering me some advice on some stuff and were willing to trade. But then they heard the other person walking by in one of the other rooms, and they flipped out right away. They said, oh, my God, we got to get out of here really fast. And they just took off running. So I thought, crap, I'm about to make this deal with someone for trading, and this other person's in another room who's potentially dangerous. And so it was very cool. A lot of moral choices that that really affect. And the game's all about those tough decisions.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of things that I've kind of seen half-baked before that right. I would – you know, just more realize that's awesome.
Like, it's kind of weird for me that you mentioned it's a 2D side scroller. Yeah. Like, that's kind of for a game of this size.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I think like one of those like isometric views, I think it would work perfectly with that. But the fact that it's a 2D side scroller is really interesting. How you can put that depth in it.
The visual style is this dark, there's like a lot of grays and the dirty look, broken down buildings, things that work really well with this 2D art style, I think. And that definitely helped, open it up. I mean, it actually hits me really personally. And my family in Eastern Europe was affected by war a lot, both sides, my mom's side and my dad's side, to where, you know, I haven't told this story all too often. My grandparents were, their home was raided by essentially terrorists, and they were beaten within inches of their death. And I didn't know any of this stuff, right? Here I am living in the U.S. This was like about 10, 15 years ago. And I'd never gone through that. The closest I'd ever been through that would be like playing DayZ or whatever, where you're trying to survive.
Yeah.
And so as he's explaining it and as I'm kind of going through these things, I started to feel, wow, this is exactly what my grandparents had to go through in some of these kind of situations, or my aunt and uncle and my cousins had to go through some of this kind of stuff. And it immediately put things in this weird perspective. And I thought, this is just a video game. But at the same time, if some of my relatives played this, they may have some very deep emotional things come up.
Yeah.
That they might use too. So I'm actually really excited about this, because even the title, This War of Mine, I mean, the director of the game, or one of the producers of the game, was telling me that, you know, This War of Mine isn't about the war. It's about the whole interpersonal struggle that you have during these types of situations that you have to battle through. So super excited for it. And I believe it's coming out this year. Don't quote me. I don't have my notes in front of me. It just seems like the kind of game that I'm going to want to, just like the one you were saying, where it's survival. It's about trying to stay alive as long as possible. I'll be coming back to you quite often. So I'm pretty stoked.
It sounds like a game that could even work in like a social studies class or something.
Yeah.
Trying to understand how war it impacts people in different ways. And, you know, it's not just, you know, two sides fighting each other. You have all these people stuck in between.
And the developers even said, you know, why not make this an FPS? You know, fans are coming to them. Why not make this an FPS? Why not make it a Call of Duty type of game where you're scavenging for stuff? And he said, it's not the point. The point is these difficult choices. You don't have as difficult of a choice when you're necessarily pointing the gun at someone on an opposing side. There aren't always opposing sides. You don't know what side is wrong or right. So it's very interesting. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's also coming out for iOS and Android as well. So
that's going to be really interesting.
That's going to open it up big time to people, I think.
I remember when FTL came out on iPad, people were just like, oh, man, this is free on iPad. So a game like this, I think, could definitely work on the iOS device or any mobile device, for sure.
Definitely. Yep.
Have you guys played State of Decay at all?
No, they had that at PAX, though. I didn't.
Because that's what that game makes me think of, except it sounds like This War of Mine is kind of using some concepts from State of Decay, which is like, you know, State of Decay is a very community-based game. You're playing as you always control just one person, but you're trying to fight for the survival of an entire group. So you're constantly having to go out and scavenge for supplies. It also makes me think of this game that's coming out from the guys who made Dead Island. I think it's called Daylight.
Yeah.
Where you have to kind of like compete with different groups for getting supplies and stuff like that. But wow, that's this war of mine just sounds incredible.
Yeah, it does. I'm pretty stoked. I mean, it's a very simple design, I guess you could say, because it is 2D in a way, or platforming, to, you know, side-scrolling platforming type of thing. But I think the depth in it and the moral choice could really kind of, you know, could really have some deep effects. So I'm pretty stoked. Dylan, yeah. what did you see? Give me one.
So since we're on the you know, the topic of roguelikes or roguelike likes or however you want to talk about them, one of the favorite games I played was called Galaxy the Dimensional.
Okay.
It's made by I believe it's 17-bit. They did Skulls of the Shogun, which is that turn-based cartoony samurai game. And Galaxy is kind of like a 2D shoot 'em up in which you're controlling a ship that kind of maneuvers around space, almost in the same way that you control the ship in Asteroids.
Sure.
Where you kind of point in one direction and you use the thrust to go forward. And if you want to go different direction, you have to kind of turn your ship around. So the controls are a little difficult at first to kind of understand, because you're constantly having to, you know, turn different directions and you're trying not to crash into things. But then you can pick up the controls pretty quickly. And so what makes the game special is that every level you do is almost like an anime show from the 80s. So it has like a title screen and like really like cheesy guitar music.
Awesome.
And all the credits are randomly generated, I believe. So you have these credits that are at the beginning. And so every level is also procedurally generated. And there wasn't really any story that was apparent to me. I was told by the developers that when the full game comes out, you're going to get a lot of banter from your allies over the radio, you know, kind of like talking about, in, you know, something that would make it feel like the story arc of an anime show. But so these levels, you're kind of just like in the middle of space and there's no apparent direction to go into. So you just kind of go whichever way. And then you find an arrow for an objective and you're just kind of navigating these areas that kind of get tightened up by these different rock clusters. And there are these different factions of enemies that are patrolling different areas. So when I say factions, they're, you know, they have different allegiances. They will fight each other if they run into each other. And the developer said that, you know, one of the big things about this game is that the AI has been designed to be very smart in how it tries to attack you and how it tries to pursue you. You know, if you hide from enemy ships, they will kind of patrol around an area and then start looking around corners.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
And so when you get into a battle with these ships, the way the controls work, you can't just, you know, point at someone and keep shooting, because they're going to be shooting right back at you. And so you have to constantly like kind of do this back and forth of evading, going back to shoot, and you're almost kind of doing like a constant loop, except the loop is always just a little bit different in that you're kind of, you know, running away a little bit and then circling back a little bit to shoot more. Sometimes I even evaded by just like trying to lose them completely.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm doing the game justice, but like it was really exciting. Just the kind of space battles that you could get in were very complex. And I don't know. It was really cool. I really enjoyed it. Like, I don't know. I have my notes somewhere. And sure. I think that's what is making me slow in explaining this. But, it was really cool.
So this is a game that was announced for the PS4, I think, as well.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Were they running it on PS4 or a PC when you saw it?
I'm guessing it was a PC with a PS4 controller.
Okay. All right. So I'm super excited for this. Visually, it looks pretty amazing. Really gorgeous. I can't wait to see this on a big screen. I walked past the booth a little bit. I didn't really get a chance to sit down. That was one of the things with PAX East this year. I think what I'm going to do next year is just block out like 4 hours of my time just to go through that indie booth, the indie mega booth, because there's so much stuff to see. And if you don't give yourself the chance to go from game to game to game and check them out, you're missing out on something. There's so many amazing games in that indie mega booth, and really all throughout PAX East, that it's very easy to walk past something. It's like you definitely need one of those mornings just to go through the entire show before you set any appointments. Maybe that's what I'll do next year.
I think what we did overall was we pretty much just stayed at Indie Mega Booth every time we came down from the media room. Like, we didn't even go to any of the big games. Like, the Borderlands line was insane. Like, once you got into that main hall where it was like, it was Borderlands, it was Evolve, and it was like Ubisoft on the side. Mm-hmm. It was like that whole hallway was just crowded. And Indie Mega Booth, you could just walk around like pretty easily because everyone was like walking around checking out all these games. It was great.
Totally,
that was pretty much my strategy to avoid the main game.
The best thing, in maybe next year, here's a hat tip. Next year, do the appointments just for the big games outside the Indie Mega Booth, and then leave yourself open to just enjoy that Indie Mega Booth by itself.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the best way to do it. Yeah. We'll know that going forward.
Yeah, but I think I still, even though that might be a plan, I still like having these appointments with the Indie Mega Booth guys. Because like, I did one with Roll 7, the guys that made Ollie, and they're making a new game now called Not a Hero, which is kind of like a side-scrolling, somewhat isometric shooter. And just to hear like where they're coming from, like with the story and just how like they made the game overall. And then I told them how much I like Ollie, and they're just really happy about it. Just to see these guys kind of like, it's just one or two guys, and they're making like a really small game that's getting a lot of attention from so many people. And just to see them kind of like, oh yeah, thank you for supporting us. That's great. It's really kind of satisfying to watch that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dylan. Sorry.
Well, I visited Klee Entertainment. Is it Klee or Klee?
I think it was. Yeah,
Klee. Yeah. I visited their booth just because I'm a fan of Don't Starve, and I talked to one of the developers, and I'm like, "Don't take this the wrong way. I love your game, but I'm also terrified of it. I don't know what to do. Sometimes I just don't know how to approach this game. I do well for a little while. I even survived like the first pack of wolves that attack you at full moon, and then I freeze to death or I starve because that's what you do in the game. And I was just like, but this is like, I don't care if I die in this game. I love the experiences these games create. Just like, I mean, I guess, you know, thinking about Galaxy, like one of the fun things that happened was I was just kind of sneaking around this chunk of asteroids, and I saw these like two different factions of enemies just shooting each other. They're just completely blowing each other up. And I was like, hey, fine with me. I'll just
sit you back guys and do watch. Your thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was going to say it. The Indie Mega Booth, we talked, a few of us actually brought this up, and I talked about it in the past as an option as well. I'm sure all of us thought about it. The idea that maybe the Indie Mega Booth should be its own show and do like an Indie Mega Show type of thing. Then you start thinking about, well, they wouldn't draw the audience if it was just indie games, I don't think. Yeah. You know, it wouldn't be like the 60 to 80,000 people that PAX gets if it was just indie games. So I think the Indie Mega Booth is, I think the size it's at right now, I don't think it should get any bigger. Otherwise, you start to lose, you know. But like you said, Dylan, and I think even you too, Rexy, there's so many great things in there. And the best part is you don't see those things in the big games, right? From the stuff from Ubisoft or from 2K or, you know, Respawn or whoever. They necessarily can't take those quite risks because they are focused a lot on the bottom line, and they have, you know, staff of, they have a staff of like hundreds of people for games, And meanwhile, the indie games are 2 to 3 to 5 folks, if that much. You know, sometimes, a lot of times, it's just one person at a booth, which I bumped into quite often. So it's, I think you need both sides. I think you need to have this the big kind of games to bring people in, and then the small games to have people say, "Holy cow, this is a really cool, you know, this is a really cool little risky experience that I'll download off of, you know, Xbox Live or PSN or what or Steam or whatever."
I think it works great because when I'm thinking this way, I think when people think about indie games, I think they only know like a little bit. Like if I talk to someone who goes, "Hey, you ever played Hotline Miami?" Like they know immediately what that is.
Yeah.
It, or Don't Starve, or you know, like I think for us when I think was it Friday morning with the hour before they were they let the general public in, we all dashed to play Transistor because we all know Supergiant, we all know Bastion. And then, like, I think from that point on, we just kind of, like, once we're done playing that, we just walk around saying, okay, what else is, like, in this area? And then finding out more about these games that we've never heard before. And I think that's kind of a great exposure for not only the people who, not only the indie developers who've had, like, this kind of success, but also to give a chance to these other guys who are just starting out.
Totally agree.
I also tried The Road Not Taken.
Okay, yeah, tell me about this. I don't know much about this game, actually.
Yeah, okay, so are you guys familiar with Triple Town?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, a very cutesy, it's almost like a match 3 game, but you're you know, trying to connect trees and make them into houses and make them into mansions and try to kill these stupid bears that keep getting in your way. So the game kind of looks a little like that. It's kind of still like a grid-based game, except it's way more beautiful, like the graphics are just, you know, just really nice, cartoony environmental stuff, you know, very nature-based environments. And so you're controlling, I think it's a ranger. He or she is a ranger. And what happens is you're just kind of moving one tile at a time. So you're going left, right, you know, up or down. And the goal is to save lost children and help their mothers feel not as sad.
Okay.
All right.
And so what you do is, it seems kind of abstract to me at first. So there, you have 15 years to live. And so every round in which you need to save a group of children is 1 year. And so after 15 years, that's the end of the game. And so every round you kind of enter there are several, screens that are connected. It's just like one big map, but you know, you kind of enter a different area every time you reach the edge of the screen. And what you do is, at least what it seems to me is that you if you get next to an object like a tree, you can kind of hit a button to pick it up or something or cause it to levitate, and then you can move and it will move with you. And so what I had to do in a few rooms was connect three trees together so that a path would open up. But then in another room, I noticed if I combine 2 bees' nests or something, or 3 bees' nests, it would turn into honey, and that would be health. But then there would be bees trying to get me at the same time. So it's kind of like it's supposed to be a roguelike because it's all procedurally generated. It's never the same, and then there's also permadeath. But it's also very puzzle based too. You know, you're trying to figure out, you know, what do I need to do on this screen to, you know, open up this path or make it so that, you know, I can bring these children from point A to point B. Because and the other cool thing is that you have only a certain amount of energy. It's a quantity. You have like a quantity of like 15 or 16 energy, or maybe it's more than that. But the idea is for whenever you pick up an object and you carry it over a few tiles, you lose one energy every time that happens. So you have to find the most efficient way to transport these different items to different places over the map, whether that's to, you know, connect three items together or to bring children back to the start point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's definitely a very like brainy experience, but you can also kind of take your time because everything that's on the screen, even if it's an enemy, they will only move. Actually, no, that's a lie. They can only move one tile per movement. So it's almost, it almost feels like it's turn-based, but it's not. It's close to it.
I'm getting a lot of, I'm getting a lot of turn-based Fire Emblem,
FTF. Yeah, I was going to say a little bit of tactics type of thing. Okay.
Yeah, with like some crafting and like, I love that there's so many levels of
difficulty
in this game. So.
Yeah, there's supposedly like tons of different items you can get. And I only played like one through one life of the 15 lives that you have. So I'm sure it gets way more complex than I was even. I mean, it was a really cool experience, so I really enjoyed it.
This is like that game I'm kind of seeing will have like its own wiki at some point. Like, you know how Don't Starve has this crazy, like Spelunky has, games like Spelunky has like this massive wiki of information that I wouldn't even know existed until I read it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like that. Like, I think that's part of that. It's part of that fun, though, but it's also part of that community of like you guys are, as a community, discovering these things and like, okay, check this out. You know, I found this here. Does anyone notice this too? And it's like, so things like, I think this is going to be really, really interesting.
Well, and it sounds like, you know, it definitely seems like one of those games where like you will discover that, holy crap, I didn't even realize these two things work together like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until you're like 20 hours into playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you start to actually figure out how to play.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's, you know, I love that about these kinds of games, and that so much of it is just playing around with the tools until you start to piece things together and say, oh, wait a minute, I think this can work with this, and Don't Starve is that same way, right? You start to play around with stuff and start to piece some things together, learn to make tools.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next time you play the game, you're a couple steps ahead mentally and prepared of how to do certain things. And, you know, once you do that, it really opens up the game even more. It's almost like the kind of game, seems like the kind of game that you'll want to play through as long as you can. And then when you start back up, you've had a really great solid foundation. And then you're playing through it almost linearly, but you're having a completely different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. It sounds real. What platform is that coming out on? Is it PC?
It's coming out on PS4 and PC.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of PS4 games and PC games. I think that Sony has been doing some great stuff with their funding of indies. And I think Taylor over at Armless Octopus is putting a piece together. He was telling me over the weekend about how Sony has been kind of managing the indie space with the PS4 and some of the advances they're doing. But yeah, the PS4 seems to be... Sony seems to be doing a really good job with their indie arm
there. And I think it's good.
Exciting to see.
Yeah, it's good for them too. I think nowadays, with what Sony has right now for the PS4, it's kind of that perfect timing where like you're kind of like, okay, I guess I'll get this because I don't know what it's about. But it's also a good way to get the exposure for these games. The only problem I'm seeing is like maybe if the indie market kind of gets overcrowded and then you're like, oh, you're going to get pulled in like 12 different directions. You don't know what to get. So,
well, I totally agree. The nice thing about the PlayStation, PS4 is PlayStation Plus. Cause every month they've had, I think except for this past month, which was Deadlight or something. I forget what it was called. Deadlight. but every month for their free game, they've been giving out essentially an indie game. So they had Don't Starve, Mercenary Kings is this month. They've been giving out some fantastic indie games, and so the same thing with the Vita and even my 3DS to an extent as well. I don't think there are hardly any indie games on the Xbox One yet, but those are coming. But I find myself keeping indie games a lot longer and going back to them a lot more than I do kind of big budget AAA games. Big budget AAA games, I'll play them, I'll play through them. and I'll be usually done with them, and I'll go trade them in. But indie games, most of the time, because they're download only, I'll buy it, and if I get to it right away, I get to it, and then I'll put it down, then I'll pick it up again, and put it down, pick it up, I'll beat it, I'll go back to it, like, months or years later. And they're always, I think they're, again, because of that level of fun that they're having in creating these games, it seems like they're replayable years later, and you never want to get rid of an indie game, so kudos to them.
I think the only kind of central thing that I saw for Xbox that was Xbox PC instead of PS4 PC was Below.
Okay.
but I really hope that gets its way into PS4, because I think that would also be great.
That's that's John Blow? Is that who that is?
No, that's Cappy.
I'm sorry, that's Cappy. Okay. I was thinking of The Witness.
Yeah,
okay.
The Witness.
Oh, I wish that was there, though.
I'm really surprised that wasn't there. But,
okay. But Below was pretty interesting.
Yeah, tell me about it. Tell me about it.
So Below is kind of like it's one of those other roguelike games. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of roguelike games this year.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's another one of those where you're this kind of warrior adventure kind of person, mm-hmm. and you're going deeper and deeper into this cave. You don't know what's there. You don't know what to expect. All you have is, like, your sword and a torch that you get in the very beginning. And, you know, you kind of craft or get items as you go. And the interesting thing about it is just that there's no HUD at all. There's all you have is just the environment around you. You just you want to see if this thing is a health potion or poison. Go ahead, take a drink. You know, it's that kind of thing where you kind of discover more and more about the level and the whole world in general. And when I talked to the developers over there, I think it was Sylvan, I forget his last name, but he said that him and the other developer I was talking to, they kept mentioning Dark Souls as like the big inspiration, because it's kind of the thing where you learn from dying. Mm-hmm. And with each time that you die, and I didn't even notice this until he told me, he's like, I don't know if he knows, but if every time you die, your corpse is still there, but it has all the stuff, so you can go ahead and get those again and just push on just a little bit further. And with each death, the world kind of randomly generates itself. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting because it's very simple. It's clean. You kind of like just, okay, where does this go? Let's walk here. Let's find out. Is there a new enemy here? Is there a new weapon that I can probably get? Can I craft X and Y together? Is this going to, you know, it's a lot of, like, you're pretty much just like the adventurer, not knowing what comes next. Sure. You're just like, you're in that position of discovering, you know, what's behind this door. What's this guy doing here? What's this huge structure that's like in my way? How can I get past it? So I think that plus the very kind of, I don't know how to call it, but it's kind of like that minimalistic feel of just not giving you any information is really interesting. And I really can't wait until they release it. But considering Cappy Games, you kind of don't know when they'll come out. So, yeah. I was really excited for it.
That's one of the games that I've been looking forward to with the Xbox One. And it's really weird. Again, I'm almost looking forward to like the indie games than I am. More looking forward to those than I am some of the big budget ones. But yeah, it's cool. I'm excited for that one. And I'm actually glad that was on the show floor, because you never know what you're going to get with some of the console stuff. You see a lot of, you know, PC-based things. There's nothing wrong with PC-based stuff, but it's cool to see that. You know, I'm going to hop in. Since the big theme seems to be these roguelike type of games, which were everywhere. I think everything is a roguelike.
Yeah, it was crazy how many like games that were roguelike or permadeath.
Yeah, I remember you brought that up in a conversation we had. You're like, yeah, everything's like roguelike all of a sudden. That's the trend. But the replayability on roguelike games is huge. But walking back from an appointment, I was actually heading back to the media room, and I've got kind of the in my article that I'm writing right now. I call it the WWE Bushwhackers, because I'm just kind of walking by, arms swinging. I was all excited. I'm like, I'm going back to the media room. I'm gonna write. Da, 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 da. Hey, what's this game over here? And wasn't especially beautiful. Didn't seem to have anything that was amazing about it. It was just kind of tucked in the corner. The game is called Echoes of Eridu, and it is a roguelike Mega Man game.
What?
And
reasoning.
Yeah, exactly right. These guys. So here is the. At first, you know, a lot of times people or developers don't like to admit when they're borrowing themes or styling their games like others. As I walked up to this game, I said, "So tell me about this game." And I had the media badge flip. The very first thing he says, one of the producers there says, "This is a roguelike Mega Man game. We love Mega Man. We wanted a roguelike Mega Man game, so here it is. There's no new Mega Man games coming out. We decided to make one." And even on their Kickstarter page, which they launched their Kickstarter page last week as well, it says, "Take one part Mega Man X and one part roguelike goodness. Add multiplayer and stir generously." It is there's no shame whatsoever for them to, you know, for themselves to admit that they're gratuitously stealing from Mega Man. And guess what? That's totally fine, in my book at least. So yeah, Echoes of Eridu, very much a Mega Man style of game, 2D platformer, side scrolling, really nice visuals, these big, bold visuals, kind of like what you'd expect a modern big Mega Man or Mega Man X game to be like. So. Really, you know, bigger sprites, hand-drawn, everything looks really good. Even the super familiar energy meter was on the left-hand side, you know, the little pill things, the stacked energy meter, the power meter. When you get to a boss, they had one boss there. When you get to the boss, you go through that, like, that horizontal... like little mini room where the one side opens, you go in, that closes behind you, walk all the way across, that side opens, and you go through there. They were so happy that they were able to recreate, you know, some of the essences of Mega Man. They were just happy to go, you know, go along with it. But you get the option of being between a couple characters, as I think Nina and Ace. They look like characters straight out of Mega Man X. The enemies look like characters straight out of Mega Man X, but it's it's roguelike, and it's kind of cool. And there's, of course, there's you know, different weapons you can make, you can get. There's the potato battery, there's a ninja sash, there's heart containers, there's power-ups, there's different weapons you can get. There's ways to upgrade your armor if you want your armor to do certain things, your boots, so you can either run fast or jump higher or double jump. Or jump further, and then there's your kind of main blaster weapon. If you want faster shots, or if you want a four-way shot, or if you want a bigger shot. So before each level, you select the loadout that you want for that level, which I think is just a great idea. Again, very kind of Mega Man-ish, but you select the loadout, what you want. You can kind of create your character or customize your character. Then you go into the level and complete the level if you can, and go forward. Super interesting idea. I'm really kind of excited to see where it goes. They're looking for $20,000. They're only looking for $20,000 for the next 3 weeks or so, which isn't. And they're up to $6,000 already. So it's not a lot of money. They're actually they're far along enough where the $20,000 is really just to kind of put the finishing touches on, you know, some of the things that they're looking to do. So that's great. The music sounded good. Everything looked good. The only issue I had, it controlled exactly what you'd expect it to control like. The only issue I had with the game was that, and this is because Mega Man is so good at doing this, and you know, Mario in kind of the same way, is that sections of Mega Man worlds and levels are very, it's thematic, so it's a lot of risk-reward, right? So you'll get through, you'll have a section where the jumps are perfectly placed. They're designed in a way to make it so that it's nearly impossible to make it across these tiny little ledges. And there's a specific way to make it across. You know, we all know that there's sections of Mega Man where you've got to hang off. You hang one foot completely off and your other foot is on with just a toe. So you can make it from one platform, you know, one floating platform to the next, you know, in time while they're disappearing and reappearing. I didn't quite notice that level of detail in Echoes of Eridu from that standpoint, right? So Mega Man, you go through a section like that where there's tons of risk, and then the next section, there's a lot, you know, the next page of the, or next part of the room, part of the level, there's rewards. So you'll get, like, an energy bar, or you'll get, you know, you'll get you know, pill or whatever, it'll be a lot easier to go through. So there's that roller coaster up and down Mega Man that works really well. Echoes of Eridu is very linear in that standpoint, or random, I guess you could say. So you'll have, like, some stages were just brutal jump after brutal jump after brutal jump, and some stages were super easy because they were very typical platformy. And some stages had good mixes of kind of vertical and horizontal elements. Some stages were just horizontal. So I think that's what they're looking for this last 20 grand or so, is to just kind of tweak that design of those worlds. Because, that again, you know, powers aside, those worlds are what make Mega Man Mega Man, you know. So this level ways to go. I think it's due to launch, again, don't quote me on this, but I think it's due to launch later this year. On right now they're looking at just PC, I believe, but I'm excited for it. It's, you know, I'm a sucker for Mega Man games, and even though this isn't a true Mega Man game, it's close enough where it'll be a lot of fun. So yeah, Echoes of Eridu. It's so self-explanatory.
I think it's great that they only have 20,000. You said it's just the final touches, and I think that's good, because it usually with Kickstarter games, you kind of see it and you go, okay, have you guys made anything yet, or is it? It's just a proof of concept.
Yeah.
But with this, it's like they've already put a lot of time and effort into it.
Totally.
Showing it off at PAX and said, hey, you've seen it now.
Mm-hmm.
You want to help us finish it? Like, it's at a point where you're enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Where, it's just literally $20,000 to put the final touches on there. And I think that's great for them that they can put that together on their own. And then just ask people for help in the end. Because I think what people like to see is an actual, at least from what I can tell in Kickstarter, is just that people want to see a working product, not just a proof that, hey, we have the vision to do this, and we need X money.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think I've only I don't really fund that much in Kickstarter. I think I've only funded one game on Kickstarter, and that was Republic that Camouflage made a while back. And even then, I was slightly skeptical. And the only reason why I really funded it was because I like the work that Ryan Payton did for Metal Gear, and I think that he's really great. I kind of wanted to support his growth and kind of like that indie scene. So I still think though that it's good for these guys that they can do that kind of development on their own and then get that final push to like kind of help or kind of make people help them out. So
totally, totally agree. The company is called Battery Staple Games. So, kudos to them when companies do that, because then it makes things really realistic when you're submitting to Kickstarter. Yeah. I'm the same way. I Kickstarter Republic, and they had issues delivering because they weren't initially, I think they were looking to make one complete game, and then at some point they decided to make it episodic, and then they didn't really know when the next episode was going to be ready. Mm-hmm. I think there's, I've funded a few games, and really Republic is the only one that's actually released. And even that was late to a standpoint. Like Sports Friends, I'm still waiting on Sports Friends. Wasteland 2, I'm still waiting on. Space Venture, I'm still... Like, every game I've donated to either has been late or is, even Double Fine Adventure, at least that's what it was called when it was in Kickstarter. That was going to be one game that was supposed to be released in 2012. And that kept getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back to, partly, I think it was partly at the very beginning of 2014, or right around there. And we don't know when the second half's going to arrive.
Right.
Hopefully this year, but you never know. So Kickstarter is a very tricky thing. And I think the report came out recently that people are donating less to Kickstarter. But I do think that's partly because companies, game developers were just asking for too much. You can't ask for like $500,000 for a game anymore and expect it to, unless you're Star Citizen. I guess maybe if you're Star Citizen or Wasteland, like a classic IP like that, maybe you can. But regardless, every game or a lot of the games were on Kickstarter at the show. And it's great. Kickstarter is great. When you do get funded, huge weight off your back to get, to get people in line to help you.
Yeah.
Bring your game to realization, but
and I think cons like PAX actually help further that. Like, if especially if they're on Kickstarter, I mean, whether you are or not or not is good. But I think just the fact that they're at PAX, they're able to show off their stuff to people who may or may not have heard of them before. Totally. Kind of gives them that exposure. Yeah. Kind of gives them the like, hey, you know, you like it? Hey, here's a little pamphlet or here's a pin that, you know, you can remember us by. Like, just keep looking us up and, you know, hopefully we'll get that exposure. And that's a good thing for indie games nowadays. So
and they're so – the great thing about indie developers, they're so enthusiastic. And they just want you to try – they just want you to try their game. Meanwhile, you go to like Evolve or 2K or whoever, and they make you wait in a huge queue to try a game, and they cut the queue off. Like, I know the Evolve queue was all 3 days. The Evolve queue was shut off by like 10:45 or 11 o'clock.
Wow!
So if you didn't get in line, if you could get in line, it was like 4 hours.
Yeah, so it's like
I was told
you're going to waste your day. Meanwhile, these indie developers are like, please, here have some free swag. Just thank you for trying out this game. You know, the enthusiasm is it's awesome, it's infectious, and there's so many things that we say about the gaming industry, and there's a lot of negatives that always pop up. But talk to like almost any indie developer, and they're some of the coolest, most excited and excitable people, and you can't not talk to an indie developer and not walk away smiling. You know, I mean, you almost feel like you're part of their team when you're trying their game.
Yeah, and I love how their enthusiasm is great. I think the person I kept running into was Evan Greenwood, who's behind Broforce.
Sure,
he's the director there, and he would just watch people play Broforce all day and just laugh along with them when they did something really crazy, because it's like it's kind of him discovering that, you know, not only do people like the game, but they're actually trying to find a way to kind of like do their own strategy. And it's like, oh, I never thought of that, or that's kind of cool, that's a great idea. I love the interaction that you have both not only with the game itself but also with the people behind it, because they're just right there telling you about it, and it's not only a way for them to show the game, but it's also a way for them to kind of get feedback on what they think is
right,
on what they need to maybe change or what they need to add or remove from the game.
Mm-hmm.
It might be too late. It might be just at the right time, but at least it's great feedback that they can get on the spot and not from, you know, like,
sure,
from, like the reviews that come out. So
awesome stuff. All right. So we got a couple more minutes here. I'm going to ask you guys what your moment or what your thing of the show was, and then we'll wrap it up. So, Rexley, what was your moment or your thing of the show? Like, what was the biggest thing that stuck out in your mind? It could be anything. It could be a game. It could be an event. It could be a happening. You know, what was anything?
I mean, this is my first big convention.
Okay.
I've never done reporting like this before. I've gone to like maybe one con in my life, and that was like a really tiny, it was like a small one that didn't have a lot of games. But just the fact that I think when I was at the media line with you guys on Friday morning, we got to go in an hour before everyone else, and just to like the moment those doors opened, I walked in through, and I was just like, oh my God, this is actually happening.
That's awesome.
That not just being there as a reporter, but just overall loving video games. Like, that's kind of like, I told people, I was like, man, if I could go back in time and talk to like my 10-year-old self, I would make 10-year-old me not only really excited but also really jealous of what I was doing this past weekend. And you know, like literally, it's literally down to exactly a week ago that we all met at Whiskey Priest that one night.
Right? Yeah,
It started to hit me like this is actually happening. So just the whole reporting and just seeing all these games and getting to meet all these people was just my big thing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Great stuff. What about you, Dylan?
I really enjoy just talking to developers because I feel like I don't think I did anything journalistically last year, and I did do stuff for Almost Octopus a couple times before that, but this year I really just kind of I just let myself go. I'm just like completely just gush about the kind of game I loved. And, you know, it was really mostly it was with developers who were working on games that were either, you know, some kind of roguelike or had permadeath or procedurally generated levels. Even the developer who was working on State of Decay, I went up to the guy from State of Decay and I was like, hey, like, and I was actually just a little bit critical too. I walked up to him like, hey, I really love your game, but on the Xbox, it's kind of slow and very glitchy. And then they had the PC version on the big screen. I was like, mm-hmm. but seeing it like this makes me want to go back and play that, because uh-huh. I know it's an amazing experience. And it's just like, it's really awesome to be able to make connections with people who are making the things that you connect with. I mean, I think I just made a circular statement, but just kind of people who understand you and like, what are your beats? What makes you tick?
Yeah.
And it was so great to be able to talk to all the developers that I did, especially the ones who make the kind of games that I really enjoy, and just to kind of, talk about, different moments in these different games. And
yeah,
it's just really cool. I mean, I don't know if there's any game convention that can, besides PAX Prime or PAX Australia, perhaps, that can kind of...
Don't forget PAX South.
And PAX South, of course. But, that creates that community feeling.
Sure.
That you can just kind of talk to anyone about it. And it just, it's just awesome to be able to talk to developers and just know that you're not crazy for, playing 50 hours of Spelunky and never
once. Yeah. It's great to see them also kind of fanboy out a little bit. Like, I know, Dolly, you and I saw this at the Indies Need Booze party with the guys from Red Hook. Because John apparently saw Ken Levine talking to whoever was holding the fort at Red Hook. And he was like, this is a great game. I helped Kickstarter. He's like, oh, cool. And apparently she had no idea it was Ken Levine. And the two guys we were talking to were just like, oh, my God, Ken Levine came to our freaking booth.
Yeah.
We weren't there. Totally. It was hilarious.
I actually experienced that, too. I was playing the new Orcs Must Die game. I was standing next to the PR guy waiting for my turn. And then all of a sudden, Ken Levine and his wife show up. And then Ken Levine's like, oh man, I love this game. I was really excited to see the new one. And they're like, oh, hey, we can just like put you right here. And so I actually got to play next to him, but I didn't say anything to him because I was like, what am I going to say? Like, everyone has played his games. But it was, I could definitely see them, all the developers being like, holy shit, like he's playing our game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my moment of show is also Ken Levine. No, I'm just kidding. I totally agree. For me, it's just when you talk to an indie developer, and nothing against the folks that work at the bigger game companies. They're not just cogs in the wheel. They're actually genuinely excited about their games too. But you don't get a chance. A lot of
the indie developers come from those bigger studios.
Exactly. Totally true. You just don't get to have the one-on-one time with those folks because they're very much – they have a lot to show and they're very schedule-based. So you don't really get a chance to talk to them. But when you do talk to the indie developers and again, like you said, Dylan, a lot of those guys come from these former big developers. They are the best way to say it? They're – I look at the stuff they do, and I don't have the talent to make games. I'd love to. My brother designs games. I know you guys met my brother. He's just getting into game design, and we had done stuff on like RPG Maker and Game Maker over the years, just kind of screwing around. But he's starting to really kind of do it as a full time gig. And but to see these guys create these games, and they give you the stories behind them, and they're indie. And they're raw. These folks are like, they're just like us. And they're as excited to show it to us as we are to play it. They're maybe more excited to show it to us than we are to play it. Like, they get excited when anybody stops by their booth. And they get like, I think the average is probably like 10,000 people will see, one of the games in the Indie Mega booth. I'm just totally guessing. Out of like the 70,000 people that show up at the show, not everybody goes to the games. Some people do the cards. Some people do the panels, blah blah blah. You'll probably get like 8 to 10,000 people checking out your game, and so you're excited to show it to everybody and to see their enthusiasm. Even on Sunday when they're really tired, they're still so excited to show you their game and to say, hey, please check this out. This is awesome. I really hope you like it. Mm-hmm. And they're open to feedback right away. Everybody I played the game, everybody, like every appointment I went to, every game I played, you know, I get them playing. I, you know, thank you. This was a lot of fun to play. And it, you can't help but leave smiling playing an indie game because you know that this is all passion. Like, they know money's going to come from it, hopefully, but it's all about the passion of game development. Like, a lot of the guys, like, at least half the folks were like, so, did you notice any bugs? Is there any, you know, is there anything that you would change? Any ideas you have? Which is so cool. You know, you don't, you wouldn't get that from, like, a 2K or an Activision or, you know, a Respawn or someone. These guys are generally open to ideas and to opinions, and they're still developing a lot of these games, so there's time for them to make tweaks. And so, yeah, they're so enthusiastic. It, like I said, it's infectious. I would totally stay inside the indie mega booth just to, you know, hang out with these folks, because I think it's super honorable to go indie. So, oh, we just lost Dylan, but
very cool.
I think that was my moment of the show. And also the handshake, the secret handshake that we developed, the trending hashtag trending handshake. Dylan's back. Yeah. The trending hashtag, I think, or handshake was my other moment of the show. I think by now you've probably seen that video on sidequesting.com of how to correctly do the handshake. So make sure you guys do that. Ouch. Learn it.
That handshake.
I've spread it to my office as well. So, I think that'll be the E3 handshake also.
There you go.
But excellent. Thank you guys so much. I'm really hopeful you guys enjoyed E3 PAX. Sorry, it's like it's only 10
Where
o'clock.
Where was I?
It's only 10 April. O'clock. God, I know, right?
That was E3.
Just 7 weeks. I heard people saying just 6-7 weeks away. I'm like, you die.
GDC was what, 2-3 weeks ago?
Next year, I guess GDC and PAX East overlap. Like they're the same week.
Oh my god.
The same week, which is going to be hell. So you're going to see a lot of weird things at PAX East and EGDC next year. Regardless.
And then we have the new PAX South.
South in January. You have CES before then. Good luck. Rexy, it was your first kind of major con. So it's awesome to hear your opinion. Dylan, you've been to a few of these things, but it's just cool to, like, you had kind of a refreshing take on it this time around. This is my first time in a
couple of
years. No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Most time I've ever been on the expo floor. I only went to 2 panels total and spent almost the rest of my time on the expo floor.
Same here.
Talking to people, playing games.
Totally agree. I had 2 panels that first day, and the rest of the time I was on the floor checking out appointments and games and stuff. So I enjoyed it. I think my only regret is not checking out the retro room, the Kickstarter room. I think that's my goal next year is to spend
Cards
some
Against
time.
Humanity.
Exactly. I didn't see any of that stuff, so next year I want to spend, I'll probably stay later on that Sunday and just spend that day just kind of checking out all the other things. So, also next year will be less about the parties and stuff and just hanging around the expo hall most of the time. Not that the parties are bad or anything. We do host the largest party list of PAX East on the internet. It's nice to just kind of hang around the expo hall and get to know people and relax. So,
yeah, it's good to just to see all these people.
Well, guys, thank you very much for joining us this wonderful evening. Totally looking forward to any other previews you guys have coming up on the site and chatting some more. I know there's
three or four more for me.
I know you're doing like the Orcs versus there's just so many things going on.
Lots of stuff.
Rexy, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Airdu, which is at HEIRDEUX.
Dylan, where can we find you?
At Dylan LJ Martin. That's DYLANLJ Martin, MARTIN. LJ stands for Live Journal.
Oh, cool. Live Journal Martin. I like that. I thought it was Luscious Juicy, but I was
actually my two middle names, but. We can say Luscious Juicy or Live
Journal. I was born with, I don't have a middle name, so it's just Dolly, at Dolly Domofsky for me. So, yeah. And you can find us at SideQuesting on Twitter and SideQuesting.com. If you're somehow listening to this and not already visiting the website, please visit the website. It's a lot of fun. Read the great article these guys have put up about PAX East. It's awesome. I'll link to some of the stuff they put on in the show notes here. So thank you guys very much. We'll see you guys on the next SideQuest. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.